All right, wonderful. Good to see you all. I have good news and I have bad news.
Uh-oh.
The good news is that we're having class tonight. The bad news is we're not moving an inch into the house.
Oh.
We're staying exactly where we were last week.
Oh, because I didn't get the paper in my mezuzah.
You
I'm being
didn't get that done
punished.
yet?
Not yet, but I'm
Come on,
working on
Arlene, I'm counting on you.
it. I
You
know, but it
don't
was
have
my mother's. It's probably all disintegrated.
you don't have the key, Rabbi? Is that
No.
it?
No. But Arlene inspired me.
Uh-oh. What are you going to do?
She inspired me because I spent the whole last class talking about the actual mezuzah, and I didn't give enough time and credit to the mezuzah case. We have to talk about the mezuzah case.
Oh,
It's
I've been
very
doing all
important.
that research because I'm looking for a new one for my front door. So
Okay,
I've been
fabulous.
doing a lot of work on mezuzah cases.
Okay. I'm
Wait,
assuming
wait,
that's
wait.
because you've already taken care of the actual mezuzah.
No, I haven't because I won't. I don't know what size kosher mezuzah I need until I buy
Okay.
the case.
Okay.
I
So
learned that. I didn't know that
you'll
before.
have to keep me posted. You'll let me know and I'll help you find one.
Rabbi,
Yes, Arlene.
does
I
that mean
haven't,
Vinny?
it's amazing. I haven't said anything yet, and we already have three comments. Unbelievable.
But does vintage, like your grandmother's mezuzah
You're
case, not
talking, one
count?
second, let's differentiate. The mezuzah itself is the parchment. Mezuzah
Right.
case is that which
It goes in
Right,
case
and
of
you're going to
it.
talk about the case.
Well,
Gonna talk about. If I get a chance, I'm thinking maybe we'll talk about
Sorry.
that tonight. The ones that I remember my grandparents having were just a little white one, probably about yay big, and it was just a cylinder kind of shape. And the back you could see there was parchment inside. It was open, but it had like a little piece of metal or something that held the paper inside. But it was just a not ornate, not it was just a plain white
Yeah, we have
metal.
some.
Yeah, so
Remember
we're going to
reading that
talk about
about
that. We're going to
yeah.
talk about that. The end of the story is you're good, but I think it's important to that's exactly why I didn't want to just immediately like, okay, we talked about the mezuzah, but there's something very special about the mezuzah case itself. So let's see, who am I going to pick on tonight? Let's pick on, hey, Candy's here. Perfect. We're going to pick on Candy. Candy, tell me something that you have a tremendous passion for, a love of.
Plants.
Banks?
Plants.
Oh, plants. I thought you said banks. I'm like, what? Okay. I also like banks, but they never give away any free samples, so I don't like them anymore.
Plants.
Plants. Okay. So tell me, what do you do because you're so passionate about plants?
Oh, I water them, I talk to them, I move them around from place to place, I prune them, I give them food, I sing to
Do
them.
you do you do you put do you put them in anything special? Do you put them in a special place?
Yeah, they
Why?
have,
Why? Why do you do all of these things?
so that I can see them all the time and enjoy them.
Yeah, but it's a plant.
Makes her happy.
It's a living thing to me.
So?
I want to watch it grow. And I love my plants.
But is it going to grow any better or worse if you put it in a in an ugly flower pot or a beautiful flower pot?
Won't grow any differently, but I relate, I take better care of them. The ones that are in my really pretty containers, it's very soft.
It's a fascinating idea. I can do this with everybody on this call. Everybody. There's something you're passionate about, and we go to the ends of the earth because we really enjoy it and we want the best, whether it's the best in aesthetics, whether it's the best in quality, the best in that. If you're passionate about something, you're not just going to be okay. It's okay. It'll suffice. Check off the checklist. Something that's meaningful to you, you want to enhance its experience, whether it's a living creature or it's an inanimate object. You love it. And you are able to express your love and passion for it by doing things in a much more beautified manner. That's just human nature. And there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's a wonderful thing. It's an absolutely wonderful concept. And that's what I want to talk about. If you love music, if you love music, and there's certain kinds of music that you love, classical or whatever it is, you want to hear the concerto, not just on some cruddy MP3 player that you bought back in 1998, that, you know, it's on its last whirl, right? You're going to want to play it in a surround sound. You're going to want to hear it and experience it. Because, oh, that's what it's like to just listen to it with a little, you know, earbud as you're jogging along. It's not going to do it justice because you're passionate about it, that it fires your enthusiasm. You're going to do it in the best possible way. This is a concept that is very well based in the Torah. See, the Torah, again, and I say this all the time because it's so true. The Torah is not only interested in your soul. Yes, we are interested in your soul. Absolutely. Primary source number one. But there's a second part of being human. You have a body. You are living in a physical world. God created us with five senses. Why? Why didn't he just create us as robotic? Okay, we can make decisions, but what difference does it make that the peach has a different smell than the apple, which has a different smell than the orange? What's the difference? This one gives me vitamin C, this one gives me vitamin A, and this one gives me heartburn. What's the difference? As long as I'm getting the nutritional, it's great. But God understands that we're human, and for us, we get tremendous pleasure out of something that we taste. We get tremendous pleasure when we see something that is aesthetically beautiful, whether it's a sunset, or a painting, or a piece of music, or whatever it is that floats your boat. There's something that we recognize of beauty. Now,
yeah.
I'm not making this stuff up. Arlene agrees 100% it's true. We know. When we go ahead, the Torah teaches us, and we'll see the source shortly, but the Torah here is teaching us that when we do mitzvos, when we do the mitzvos in the Torah, we should be doing it with an enhanced sense of beauty. For example, I'll tell you the actual phrase. We know the act of doing the mitzvah is called a mitzvah, a commandment. That's what the word is. But what we're talking about tonight is something called hidur mitzvah, the beautification of the mitzvah. The act of the mitzvah is the same. I will do this mitzvah. For example, I will wear my talit. I wear my talit for my services. I have a beautiful, as I pronounce it, as a talis. It's a beautiful, but I can get one that's, you know, probably $50. I can get one for $60. It's fine. It's okay. But then there's one that it's a higher quality. It looks nicer. It sits nicer on me. That cost me $100. The mitzvah, or this aspect of it, wearing the prayer shawl, wearing the talis is the same, whether it's the $60 talis or the $100 talis. Same mitzvah. The difference is that I enjoy doing that mitzvah. I'm going to wear one that is more beautiful. That's nicer. I feel better about it, but more importantly, as we will see, it makes a statement of how important mitzvos are to me. I'm passionate about doing a mitzvah And therefore, I want to do it in the best possible way. I love music. I want to hear it in surround sound. I love to hear it. I don't want to just, okay, I fulfilled my responsibility. Yay. Check. No, I want to do it in an enhanced manner. The joy and the love of fulfilling Hashem's mitzvos is expressed with you have an attitude towards mitzvah observance, and it's reflected in the beauty that we have. So yes, last week we talked about the essential aspect of the mitzvah called the mezuzah. That's the parchment. That's the holy scroll that is written by a scribe with the black ink on a real piece of parchment. All of that, that's the mitzvah. But I do it in an enhanced manner when I get myself a beautiful mezuzah case. It's not because I'm vain. Okay, maybe a little. It's because I want to show that the mitzvah is dear to me, and I'm going to beautify it. I'm going to do it for my mezuzah. I'm going to do it when it comes to the holiday of Sukkot, and I'm going to buy myself a lulav and etrog. I can get a $50 etrog, and it's fine. I can fulfill the mitzvah. It will meet the bare minimum requirements of what the four species of a lulav and an etrog and hadassim and a rava, and I will get a check for doing the mitzvah. However, if I can get an etrog that looks nicer, that is, it's really, it's almost perfect shape. It not just I fulfilled the bare minimum. I do above and beyond because I love it. And I want to express my love of doing the mitzvah. I'm going to get a beautiful etrog. I'll let you in on a little secret. For the past many years, I teamed up with one of the synagogues here before the holiday of Sukkot. They have a sale for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in the community. So you can imagine that this particular synagogue literally gets probably 700, 800 etrogim. And some people have to go through it ahead of time to know how to classify it. Is this a one? Is this an aleph, which is an excellent? Or is it a bet, which is, it's fine? Or is it a gimel, it's passable? And you have to rate them. So I go a few days before the holiday, and I, together with a few others, and we go through all of these hundreds of etrogim. We do that. But here's the dirty little secret. I do it not because I love them. I do it because I get first dibs on the most beautiful etrog in the box. That's the dirty little secret. Because I'm the first one to open up those boxes, and I look at it, and I say, okay, that's a bet. That's a good one. That's fine. And this one's an aleph. That's nice. Whoa. That's like an aleph plus. That I'm going to put aside. That one I think I'm going to reserve for Rabbi T. And I come across another one, and I'm like, ooh, this could work for my son Moshe T. That's an also an aleph plus, right? Now, is there anything wrong with that? No. Call it insider trading. I don't care. You can, fine. But I get first dibs. I'm helping. I sort it all out, and great. But what am I spending? I literally spend hours and hours and hours checking the etrogan, checking the lulavim. I want mine that is straight as an arrow. I don't want one that looks like this. It's not going to work for me. There's a certain beauty that I'm looking for. And the same with the hadassim, the myrtle, and the willow. I spend time doing this. It's the same thing for Hanukkah. Hanukkah is coming up, and we're going to talk about it. I can do it with a nice, you know, Chanukiah, nice menorah, it's fine. But my parents bought me a silver menorah. Beautiful gift. It's beautiful. How many of you light candles, right, for Shabbat? You have a nice pair of candlesticks. Not just, I get one that's sentimental and it's passed down from the Alta Baba from Europe. I'm fine with all that. But there's something, there's beauty. You're not going to just go down to the, you know, to the local shop right and buy, you know, a pair of tea lights. Okay. Can you fulfill the mitzvah with tea lights? Yes, you can. You are fulfilling the essential mitzvah of lighting candles for Shabbat. No argument, no question. But what looks nicer? Two tea lights or part of a set that looks beautiful because it's passed down from who knows who, or it's a nice, beautiful, artistic one, or it's silver, or it's whatever. You're enhancing the mitzvah. Every single mitzvah we do, we have the ability of not just doing it, but beautifying it. That is the theme of what we want to talk about tonight. Learn the phrase, hidur mitzvah, beautifying. The word hadar, hadar in Hebrew means beautiful. Hadar, H-A-D-A-R, hadar. It's called hidur mitzvah, the beautification of the mitzvah. This is really an important idea. If it's something important to you, if you're a contractor, you're not buying the cheapo drill. You're buying whatever the top of the line drill is. I can't even think what it is right now, right? You're not getting a cheapo. Why? Because these are the tools of my craft. I'm wanting, not just because it's quality, but it makes a statement. This is important to me. A cheapo drill? Okay, so I'll get another one in 6 months. No. The tools I use, I want to show the quality. That's what's important here. Okay, so where is the source? Where is the source in the Torah for this? So, I'll throw it out there. Does anybody have an idea? If you know this, that's really amazing. Most people do not know the source of this. Care to guess, anybody?
Building the ark, the embellishment of the ark.
You're not far. Muriel, you're not far. You're pretty close. We're going to tie it into the building of the temple and tabernacle. We're going to tie that in. But it actually is a little bit earlier in that story. As the Jews were leaving Egypt, the Exodus, right? Celebrated by which holiday? Don't say Hanukkah, that'd be wrong. Passover. Good. Right. Passover.
2448.
What?
2448.
2448. That is correct. Okay. So the Jews get to the sea. They get to the sea, and all of a sudden the Egyptians are following up now behind them, and there's nowhere to go. They call out, they jump in the water, and the sea splits. Famous story of what's known as Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the Sea of Reeds. Okay? And they sing a song when they see the Egyptians who had been following them were destroyed. And the Jewish people sing what's known as the Song at the Sea, Shiras Hayam, the Song by the Sea. It's recorded in the Torah itself. I'm just going to read one phrase. The phrase reads as follows. Where is it? Yeah, verse 2. The might and vengeance of God was salvation for me. This is my God, Zeh. Eli, this is my God. And here's the Hebrew word, the anvehu. One word, the and anvehu. Do I have to explain? You guys got that, right? Right. Nobody has any idea what that word means. Anvehu, like what is it? So some of us might be familiar because we know the expression already. This is my God and I will beautify him. I will glorify him. Zeh Eli, this is my God, ve'anvehu, and it comes from the word no'eh. No'eh means beautiful, nice, right? If I was very, very lucky and I did well on a test in school in Hebrew, they would write on the top 95, yafe ma'od, or no'eh, well done, good, beautiful. And then in parentheses, it says about time, right? So ve'anvehu means, and I will glorify him. I will make it beautiful. This is the source, the Talmud says, right? To beautify the mitzvos in the most glorious fashion. But wait, where was that manifest in that story of the Exodus? So Muriel to the rescue is because soon thereafter, we went to Mount Sinai, we got the Torah, and immediately thereafter, we were given the command to build the sanctuary. To build the tabernacle that was the portable sanctuary that was with us for the 40 years we were traveling through the desert. And the Torah spares I don't even know what the word is. It seems to go on and on and on describing the actual construction, what materials were used, what vessels were made. First, you have the command to do it in detail. Then you have another entire section of where they actually did it, and they repeated it all, the gold and the silver and the copper and the wool and the turquoise and the all the different colors of wool that they dyed and the tapestries that they wove and the beautiful kalem, the vessels, the menorah and the table and the ark, and it's this and it's that. It was stunning. Stunning. Okay, stop and think for a moment. The Jews, maybe 8 weeks earlier, 9 weeks earlier, were slaves. They don't know from beauty. All they know is you get up early in the morning, do your job, and if you're lucky, you go to bed late at night and not get whipped in between. And then they're freed. They're taken out. They watch miracle upon miracle upon miracle with the manna from heaven and the clouds of glory and the fire that protected them and lit up the night as they traveled. And they go through the desert and they get to Mount Sinai and this revelation of unbelievable proportion. And then God says, make for me a sanctuary. If I were there, I would have said, all right, I got to catch my breath. I have no idea what is going on here, but God wants a sanctuary. So let's make him one of our tents. You know what, Tuchman, give up your tent. Go move in with Finkelstein. You guys share a tent. Go give up your tent. Make it for, yeah, that's what I would have said. But that's not what God said. God said, I want you to take gold and silver and copper, all the stuff that you just looted out of Egypt and you collected along your way. Yeah, I want a piece of it. And I don't want just a 2x4. I don't want just a little sukkah. I don't want a little hut. I want a nice, beautiful, ornate craftsmanship of a sanctuary. And then maybe I'll come down and dwell amongst you. I would have gone like this. I would have like, what are you talking about? Yeah. God was telling us from the very beginning, if you're going to do something that's spiritual, you're going to do something of meaning where you're connecting with the creator of the universe, don't do it half-baked. Do it right. Make it beautiful. Not because God needs the gold ark. God could care less what it's gold or, but it's a statement. It's a statement that says, this is important to me. I have a passion for this, and I'm going to put my best foot forward. Not Tuchman's tent. No, that's nice, but it ain't the real deal. You need the real deal. In fact, that is the second understanding of this strange word, ve'anvehu. I first translated it as, and I will glorify him. I will beautify him. But there's a second meaning. And it means, I will build for him a sanctuary. That's the meaning. This is my God, and I will build a sanctuary. At first, I didn't understand. How could those two concepts be related? Beautify and glorify and build a sanctuary. They seem to be two very different concepts. Oh, but they're not. Because that is the ultimate expression of how I will glorify him. How will I make it beautiful? Because when I make a sanctuary for God's presence to dwell, I'm not going to do it half-baked. I'm going to do it the best. With the most beautiful materials, in the most ornate form of craftsmanship. Yeah. That's how we do it. If you walk into your sanctuary, you walk into your synagogue, don't you want to see in the front a beautiful ark? Don't you want to see the curtain that's in front of it, the parochet? That it's a nice thing instead of just, you know, it's torn. It bothers me. There's a certain place that I go to catch a quick minyan. It's not my regular shul, but sometimes I go there. And it bothers me because the cover that goes over the Torah after it's being getting ready to be put away, so you tie it, and then you put this cover over it. In Yiddish, they call it the mantle, right? It goes over it. And it bothers me because the little fancy schmancy tassels that are at the bottom. It's torn. It's torn, and it bothers me. So, okay, so I let it go a few weeks. And I went up to the guy and I said, I'm happy. I'll take it home and we'll sew it. We'll make it. I got to get permission. Meanwhile, a month goes by, 2 months go by, 3 months go by, and I'm still torn and it bothers me. This is the Torah. This isn't my notebook of notes that I have papers flying all over the place. This is the Torah. You want it to look good because it makes a statement. Okay. Hiddur mitzvah, the beautifying of the mitzvos in general. It's not limited to our mezuzah case. It's not limited to our etrog. It's not limited to our sukkah. It's not limited to our Shabbos candles. There is no limit. It's everything we do in the performance of a mitzvah should be done with beauty. How? What's the mindset? I'll tell you, it's very simple. If you approach it that I'm doing the mitzvah, not as a burden because Nebuch, unfortunately, I'm Jewish, and Nebuch, I have to unfortunately follow the dictates of the Torah. All right, I can't have this and I can't have that and I got to do this and I got to do that. You're right. Then there's no fun. There's no impetus for doing it beautifully because you just got to get it done. But if you don't look at it that way as a burden or a yoke or something that you want to dispense with and shirk off the responsibilities, but you see it as this most joyous opportunity for growth, now you're talking. Now you're talking. The mitzvah is the means of expressing my love in that relationship. I don't want to be just, quote unquote, getting by with the minimum. How much do you want it, God says? Show it to me. You want a check mark? Okay, I'll give you a check mark. But there's a way to do it that says, I love this. I want it. We talked about this a while ago, the whole concept of how much do you really want it? We talked about it, what's known as Pesach Sheni, the second Passover, a month after the holiday of Passover. Those who were unable to do it, bring the Paschal offering, had another opportunity. And I asked you then, and I'll ask you again, if I told you that you can get away with not keeping kosher, not keeping Shabbos, not having to fast on Yom Kippur, and there are no repercussions, Hashem says, I'll give you a freebie. You did it 50, I'll give you the 51st free. Great deal. Great deal. How many of us would sign up? Don't raise your hand. There will be some of us that will sign up for that option. No repercussions. But not if you love it. Not if you see that fasting on Yom Kippur, as challenging as it may be, is an opportunity for purity, to cleanse myself, get a fresh start. That when I go out into the sukkah, energized with concepts of priority of my material well-being. When I eat matzah, not my favorite food, but I'm reminded that I have been given something of freedom no matter what environment I find myself. Nobody can ever take that away from me. When I celebrate Shavuos, right? Giving of the Torah, we became different people forevermore. These aren't just check, 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 check. Gotta do, gotta do, gotta do. It's opportunities. And when you love opportunities, you do it in a beautiful manner. You buy yourself a beautiful goblet for Kiddush on Shabbos to make Kiddush. You can use a plastic cup, theoretically, but that's not Kiddush. You make Kiddush in a beautiful goblet. That's how you do it. Okay. But that takes us to a different question then. I know you're all on board with this. I'm not seeing any naysayers, and that's good. This might be a first, okay? But here's the question. I told you that the source for this is from when the Jews sang at the song at the sea. Ze Eli Ve'anveyu, this is my God and I will beautify him. Of all places in the Torah to teach us that concept, in the midst of the throes of being saved from the Egyptians, that's where they took a time out and said, aha, this is the time to express our love to do this. And we're going to be, How come the Jewish people committed themselves to beautifying the mitzvot specifically at a point in time when they're witnessing the splitting of the sea? What does A have to do with B? I could have said, when we built the, like Muriel did, when we built the tabernacle, and it was all, okay, I can learn that there. But the splitting of the sea, why is that the primary source as a story that teaches that concept? It's a question I never thought about until I prepared for this class. So thank you for forcing me to grow and to get more information. It's a great question. I don't know why I never thought about it. What is the connection between Hiddur mitzvah, beautifying the mitzvos, and the splitting of the sea? So if you were like me, at some point in your Judaic Jewish knowledge and education, you came across a couple of, I'll use the word, descriptive, exciting, unusual, I don't know about that kind of midrash about what happened at the splitting of the sea. What happened? Miracles that are not expressly stated in the Torah, but were told by tradition in a midrash or Talmud or some other Judaic source about unusual things. Like, how did it split, by the way? How did it split? Was it just water made room? Well, one medrash says you can't displace water like that. It has to form walls because you're pushing it. You're stopping the water flow. And if you keep stopping it, it keeps growing up, up, upwards instead of outwards. So these massive walls of water. If you've ever been in the ocean, you know that you can see somewhat there, but you can't really see too far down, even if it's crystal clear, right? Says the midrash that not only was there one split, there were 12 splits of the sea, one for each tribe to walk through separately by themselves. But wait, it gets better. Not only were there 12, but the walls that went between them were transparent and they could see each other. And they're like, you know, waving through the glass like at the aquarium, you know, waving to the sharks. Hi, guys. You know? I'm making joke of it, but there's literally tens, maybe hundreds of midrashim that talk about these additional miracles. It didn't, right? They have all these paths. They rose on both sides. The normally muddy seabed was dry land, making it easier to walk. And literally tens and tens and tens. Why? What? When I was younger, I used to say, okay, I don't know. It's enhancing it. I don't know what the word is. You know, it's just, oh, cool, cool. You know, but as I got older, I'm like, what is the point? What is it that our sages are trying to impress upon us? That God is even greater than I thought. Not only could he split it, he turned muddy water into dry land. Whoopee. Okay. God can do everything. How does that enhance my understanding of God? It doesn't. What it shows is something much more profound. And that is God didn't just split the sea. He didn't just save us. He went above and beyond the bare minimum to save us. He didn't suffice to just, okay, I'll make sure that the Jews get through. Okay, so it was a little muddier than anticipated, but I don't think anyone's going to complain because the Egyptians are going to drown. And you know what? You got mud on your shoes? Suck it up, Tachman. That's the way it goes. And you move on. It's the desert. It'll dry out in 2 days. Done. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, God could have accomplished the goal in a very simple, straightforward manner. But that's not what Hashem did. He went above and beyond all the extra miracles that took place just to make our journey through the sea, through the split water, more secure, more enjoyable. He went above and beyond those stages. We even say this in our Haggadah at the Seder Passover night. So strange area, it's a strange section. It talks about the 10 plagues, and then it brings down opinions. Yeah, there were 10 plagues in Egypt, but no, there were 50 by the splitting of the sea. Not 50, 200, not 200, 200. Okay, very nice. 250, do I hear 300? Do I hear 300? Do I hear 400? 400, 400. What are we auctioning off miracles here? What are we doing? I'll tell you what we're doing. What we're doing is we are emphasizing this point. Can you imagine if God did 250 little things to make our journey through the sea more enjoyable, more secure? An appreciation for that is just off the charts now, because God didn't want to just do it. God wanted us to enjoy it because he loved us, and he expressed that love by the more that he showed it, right? To go ahead, God went above and beyond what was necessary to save them. And what's our response? In the song we sing to acknowledge it, we commit ourselves to go above and beyond, and we will beautify your mitzvos, God. I'm not going to be just satisfied. I'm going to go above and beyond. I'm going to show that it's beautiful. You went above and beyond the bare minimum. I'm going to go above and beyond the bare minimum. And hence, the perfect place to bring out this concept of beautifying the mitzvah, of going above and beyond what the minimum requires, is exactly the story by the splitting of the sea. I found that insight spot on. I loved it. Never bothered me, but once he raised the question and gave that answer, I feel like today was a success. I can go to bed tonight knowing the brain cells expanded. This was great. But here's where it gets better, in my opinion. Because this concept of Hiddur Mitzvah, beautifying our performance of the mitzvah, there's one holiday in particular that really, it becomes a central theme of the whole holiday. And it's the holiday of Chanukah. You say, really? That's good timing, T. Yes, I chose it perfectly. Good thing we went through the front door and not the back door, because I don't know if I would have gotten to this. I'll tell you, it's really fascinating. There is, if you were to ask me, Rabbi, listen, I can't explain it. I have no money, nothing. I have nothing to my name, and Chanukah is coming. What do I need to do to fulfill the mitzvah of lighting candles for Chanukah? My response to you would be the bare minimum halacha, the bare minimum law, is you light one singular candle for the entire family each night of Chanukah. That's it. Bare minimum. One candle for the entire household each night. You just have to somehow scrounge together enough money for 8 candles. That's it. No shamash. No, add one each night. No, one for each member of the family. No. Baseline halacha, one candle per household each night. That is the true baseline halacha. However, the Talmud says, if you wish to do it in a nicer manner, the word that the Talmud actually uses is called mehadrin. What word do you hear? Hidur. You hear the word, right? Mehadrin is to make it more beautiful. Then what you do is you light one candle per member of the household. If you want to do mehadrin min ha-mehadrin, the most beautiful, continues the Talmud, then you light an additional candle each night according to Beis Hillel. That's the opinion that we follow, that each night you go from the first night you light one, second night two, three, which is our custom. Fascinatingly enough, if you look in the Code of Jewish Law, it brings down only the best of the best. It only brings down what we do. One the first night, two the second, three the third. It doesn't even give you the baseline. It doesn't even give you the middle ground of one per family member. No. It goes straight to the top, the creme de la creme, the best. Light one the first night per member of the family, two the second night per family member, three and up till you go the last night, 8 candles per person, best way to do it. This mitzvah is all about mehadrin, mina mehadrin. Beauty upon beauty, the best of the best. Why? Of all the holidays. So I know Sandy. Sandy's a smart cookie. And she's thinking to herself, yeah, of course, Rabbi, because it's not that big of a deal. Instead of having 8 candles, you'll have 44 candles or 36 candles if you're not using the shamash. It's not that big of a cost. I can do that. Okay. So it's $3 a box, $5 a box. If you're going to make me do this for matzah and wine for Pesach, oh my God, can you imagine how much money we'd have to spend for that? Oh, heavens. Or I have to do even more Mishlalach Manos on Purim? Oh, my God. I'm already spending a fortune on all these themed packages. That's what Sandy's thinking. But she knows that's not the right answer because the Torah wouldn't care. That's if that's what the best is, and that's what we do. We spend the extra money because that's important to us. So what is it about Hanukkah in particular that we have this great focus on beautifying it to the degree? So, in the remaining time, here's what we're going to do. We have to explain a little bit of understanding of why we even celebrate Hanukkah in the first place. So we're all familiar. We know the basic storyline, and that is that the Jewish people were living in the land of Israel. We were there. We actually even had our temple. But the Greeks came, right? The Greeks came, and they took over the authority. Okay, I'll say it in that terminology. They really were on a conquest of not just Israel. They took over the whole region and they came and ultimately they worked their way all the way through Israel and they came to the temple. And let me be very clear. The Greeks did not destroy the temple. That is not true. The Greeks came in and they had an issue with what we wanted the temple to be. They had an issue as follows. They wanted everything to be on equal footing. They were not into the concept that man, human being, can have a relationship with a God. Not to the extent that we can take something mundane and say that it has holiness in it. I'll give you an example. Is a non-Jew allowed to bring a sacrifice in the times of the temple? Can a non-Jew bring a sacrifice as an offering in the temple in Jerusalem? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. However, it could only be brought as what's known as an ola offering. An ola was an animal that was brought that was 100% consumed on the altar. There were no parts. Many other sacrifices and offering, parts were burned on the altar as an offering to God, and other parts were given to a Kohen, other parts that the owner of the or the bringer of the offering had to partake of, but there were divisions. Some was burned on the altar for God, and others were for people to partake of. The Ola offering, as the word Ola means all going up, was completely consumed on the altar. That's what the non-Jew could bring, and which is a wonderful offering. Nothing wrong with that. But it's indicative of the difference of a perspective. For us as a Jew, the perspective is it's possible to have both something holy that is for God and yet mundane for man. The two are not contradictory. I can be both physical and spiritual. In their perspective, you can't be both. If you're physical, you're not in touch with your spiritual, and you are completely absorbed in the physicality of the world. If you want to go the spiritual route, then you have to get rid of, and you have to sever ties with the physical world. In their mind, if you want to grow spiritually, you can't marry and have children. You have to take vows of poverty. You have to take vows of silence. You have to, because any involvement in the physical is a contradiction to the spiritual. In a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, they are not contradictory. In fact, they're complementary. They work hand in hand. The Greeks, said, we have no problem with the concept that there's a God. Okay, maybe there was a God that created a universe. Okay, I'm cool with that. But there are maybe many other gods. And okay, that's fine. You want to tell me that God shared a book of wisdom called the Torah? Okay, I can accept that. But there are other books of wisdom. Plato, Socrates. That you can have a beautiful bookcase full of books of wisdom. And the Torah is one of those books. But that you're telling me that it's unique, that it's on a different level than anything else, that we're not willing to accept. You want to have a temple? Fine. It's for Jews and non-Jews. The same way our temples are open to everyone. Don't tell me that there's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. They can't live with that concept. The Greeks were all about the physical beauty of the world and our bodies. Right? I'm sure all of you know that the Olympics were originated in, yes, it was, good old Greece. Yes, where the first French fries were. I'm just kidding. They were in Greece, fried in Greece. Okay. No, but Greece was the area. Why? Because it was all about worshiping the physical nature. Beauty was worshiped for beauty's sake. Because that's art. That's beauty. The study of character, parts of the soul. No. That's not for us. That's not for us. When they came into the temple, they didn't destroy it. What they said is that this oil, whether you touched it, I touched it, someone else touched it, doesn't matter. Oil is oil. It doesn't have another spiritual quality that becomes defiled. If it's not. What are you talking about? Put it under a microscope. That bottle of oil is the same as that bottle of oil. What's the difference? Why? Because it was defiled? What does that mean? They can't wrap their head around that concept. Or I should say better, they denied that concept. They weren't willing to accept spiritual things. That could be in your heart. That can be in your mind, but not in the physical. The physical was the physical. And the spiritual is something else. No, that oil is physical. Don't tell me that it has another element, another aspect. I can't see it. I can't put it under a microscope and define it, but it's defiled. It became tame, impure. Why? Because someone who's not supposed to touched it? You can't see that. So they came in and they defiled the temple. They didn't destroy it. They tried to strip it of its spiritual nature and make it nothing more than a beautiful physical building. Okay. And that physical building, you want to pray to God, pray to God. But there can't be a spiritual component within it itself. Judaism does not scorn beauty, but it makes it not as a primary importance, but a secondary, an enhancer of something already beautiful. I'll give you the mathematical example. The number zero, how much is it worth, Wayne?
Worth everything.
Zero?
Worth nothing.
It's worth nothing. Nada, nil, zilch, FS, garnish, zip. But fascinating. If I have a one that has value, right? One has a value. And right. I put a zero next to it. Now what is it?
Now 10.
It's 10. Wow. Wait, how did zero turn a one into 10? Because from our perspective, if you have something of value, something that is real, that has value, then the zero, the beauty, which is by itself not important to us, what it does is enhances what is real. It turns a one into 10. Even though by itself, zero has nothing, has no value. You hear that? It's a great concept. Judaism does not turn away beauty. In fact, the Torah itself tells us some of our matriarchs were beautiful women. Okay, Rabbi, isn't that a little bit immodest? Like, why is the Torah pointing that out? I thought we're not supposed to be focusing on beauty like that. Come on. That's not the way I was told in school. The answer that many commentaries tell us, excuse me, is that, yeah, beauty in and of itself. We sing this as a song Friday night in the song Eshet Chayil, a woman of valor that we sing. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's a beautiful song that we sing before Kiddush, right? So towards the very end, Sheker Hachein Vehevel Hayofi. Vanity is a falsehood. Vanity is falsehood and beauty is garnished. Beauty is nothing. It's hevel. It's nothingness. Okay, on the one hand, beauty is nothing. And yet the Torah tells us about beautiful women and that Jerusalem is beautiful. And you have all these. How do you deal with that? The answer is that if you have something in the inner core of value, of substance, then beauty enhances it. You have a mitzvah to do that has value. But when you enhance it, when you beautify it, it takes on a whole new level. It doesn't grow arithmetically. It grows exponentially. Beauty is an enhancer. Where we differed from the Greeks, that the Greeks looked at beauty as the it itself. Beautiful for beauty's own sake. That's not our perspective. When we look at something beautiful, here's an example. You go to a museum and you see a beautiful painting. Gorgeous. What does it say to you? How beautiful is the picture? Then you're missing the main point. What it screams out is, wow, how talented the artist was who could capture this and put it on a canvas. There's beauty in how it was captured. You get the feeling it's trying to portray. Now you're talking. You recognize, not because just in and itself is beautiful. That's level one. Level two says it speaks volumes about the person. And when you have something of value, beauty enhances it. I'll even show you this. You guys don't know enough, maybe don't know enough in terms of the history of people. Where does the origin of the Greek culture come from? I'll give you a hint. We know that God destroyed the world in the time of Noah and the flood. There's only four couples that are saved. Noah and his wife, their three sons and their wives. That's it. Those are your eight people in total. Okay? The Torah tells us that Noah and his wife had three sons. One whose name was Shem. The other was Ham. Hate that one, right? Never understood the translation on that. And the other one is known as Yefet. Shem, Ham, and Yefet. Those are the three sons. We come from Shem. All the Semite people. Why are we called Semites? Because we come from Shem. Shem, Sem. That's the name. We are descendants of Shem. Greece, Rome, they come from Yefet. They come from that third son, Yefet. Do you know what the word Yefet means? Yafeh. Anyone know what Yafeh? Yafa. You know anyone whose lady's name's Yafa? My wife's middle name is Yafa.
I think it means beautiful.
It means beautiful.
Beautiful.
Exactly what the word means. Shem means name. Yefet means beauty. Funny names to give your kids. Come here, name. Come here, beautiful. And of course, everybody comes, right? Well, Yefet means beauty. Means beauty. Why is he named that? Because what happens? We know that shame. Okay, sorry. I'm going way too fast. We know the story of Noah. When he gets off the ark, he gets built. He plants a vineyard. He gets drunk. He's naked in his tent, right? And in comes Ham and Canaan. Who comes in to rescue? Who comes in properly? The other two sons. Shem and Yefet. They come in backwards. They don't want to see their father uncovered. And they have the blanket, the cloth ready. And they come in backwards not to see. And they cover him and they go back out. Okay? Noah realizes this. And at the end, he gives them a blessing. And I want to read you the blessing. And Shem and Yefet took a garment, laid it upon both their shoulders, and they walked backwards and covered their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned away, and they saw not their father's nakedness. Fine. Noah awoke from his wine and realized what his younger son had done to him. He finally gave a curse to him. But here's what he said. And he said, blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem, let Canaan be a slave to them. Listen to the words here. May God extend Yefet, but he will dwell in the tents of shame. May God extend Yefet, meaning let Yefet become mighty. Let him grow into an empire that lives in the world. May God extend Yefet, his influence throughout the world, throughout history. But on one condition, he has to always be in the tent of shame. What does that mean? Not shame as in S-H-A-M-E. Shem, the other son. S-H-E-M. He should dwell in the tents of Shem. What that means is our concept right now. Yefet, which means beauty, will have a place in this world, but on one condition, that it always is connected to Shem. Shem, the people that stand for values, the people that have a code of living with ethics. Why is the word Shem mean name, right? What's so significant about names? We've talked about this many, many times. The name defines the essence of someone or something, right? Remember when we did the alphabet? We showed how the letters themselves are defining it. So the Shem, the name of something, is its core, its essence. You know where beauty has a place? When it's connected to that which has an essence. By itself, why didn't the blessing just be, may God extend Yefet? May he become big and great, and let us all say amen. But that's not what the blessing was. It only will have value when it's connected to Shem, when it's connected to something that has an essential nature. Beauty by itself is a zero. Our world has become so shallow that that is all it focuses on. How does somebody look? There was a great article. It's late. I don't want to hold you guys too long, but there was a great article about a very, very successful, beautiful young lady who made it in that world, the cosmopolitan world, who was Jewish. And I don't remember how she got turned, but she started to explore a little bit more about her Judaism and realized that the life she was living was not in concert with the life she should be living. And she gave that up, whatever it is. She used a certain expression in her article when she was talking about why she switched and she became much more observant and traditional in observance. She said, because I got tired of always being looked over. It's not so bad to be overlooked. What a great insight. People walk down the street and all they do, people look you over and they make decisions about you. They don't know you from a hole in the wall. You haven't said anything, you haven't done anything, but they've already made decisions just by externals. Get to know a person, say hello to the person. What's your name? Where are you from? You can find out something about a person. Don't judge it based on only externals. That's a Yefet mentality. Just look at the physicality. That's it. The beautiful body, that deserves to be worshipped. What if the person is a scoundrel? What if the person is a yatz? What if the person is a gano? He's a thief. Doesn't matter. He's beautiful. Mr. Atlas. He can hold up the world. But that's all they focused on. The story of Hanukkah is all about this conflict where the Greeks were all about only the externals, only the physicality. And we said there had to be something of essence. The temple was beautiful because it reflected and was joined with something of substance, something of meaning. It had an essence to it. It had a spiritual nature of inspiring us to be better. Then beauty has a place. Our matriarchs are called beautiful women because first we're introduced about the character of these women. Their kindness, their sensitivity, their warmth, their abilities, all that. Then, okay, so now tell me they're also physically beautiful. Fine. It enhances it. That's the difference between us and the Greeks. And that's why specifically on the holiday of Hanukkah, we make a big deal about beautifying the mitzvah, because where the Greeks agreed it's all about beauty, we said it's misplaced. It's only when there's beauty connecting you to a mitzvah when there's something of substance, of value, then beauty is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do the mitzvah in the most glorious and enhanced way. That's the real deal. And that's what I think is really part of the message of Hanukkah. Maybe when we get a little closer, we'll talk a little more about this for Hanukkah. But that is the idea. And that is the mitzvah, or I should say better, the Hidur mitzvah, the beautifying of every mitzvah that we do, not just to be Yotze, just to, I did it. I'm doing it, and I'm doing it because I have a passion and an opportunity. Every single mitzvah can be done this way. So bringing it full circle, going ahead and making sure that you have a real mezuzah is the mitzvah. That's the parchment. But putting it in a beautiful mezuzah case, that enhances it. That brings attention to say, when somebody walks through the door and doesn't just see a plastic whatever, you fulfilled the mitzvah. But it doesn't draw attention. I got no problem. Draw attention to that beautiful mezuzah case. Somebody should come in and say, wow, that's beautiful. You say, you know, because that's my mezuzah case. Because behind it is a mezuzah. Behind it, there's something that reminds me that we believe in one God, and you teach the lesson of a mezuzah. Perfect. Great. Every mitzvah can be enhanced. Every mitzvah can be brought with that sense of wow and beauty. There's no mitzvah that can't be enhanced. That is, I think, a very important concept. Don't do it just fulfilling the bare minimum. Do it because you love it. Do it because you have a passion and you recognize that every time you do a mitzvah, a simple mitzvah, giving tzedakah, you can just hear. Or you can do it in an enhanced manner, right? I love the fact that sometimes people will send in a check and they'll write just, I don't care, one sentence, just a handwritten note that says, really appreciate all that you do. Thanks. Great. It's more than the check. Okay, don't mind me. I like the check too. But it's not just a check now. Now the mitzvah is enhanced because you've expressed it. You've beautified it. There's no mitzvah that you can't do beautifully. And that's what the Torah teaches us. Hidur mitzvah. According to some authorities, it's actually biblical. A biblical mitzvah. Most authorities say it's rabbinic. But either way, it shows an attitude. More than just, okay, I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied with just doing it. I want to do it in the most enhanced manner because I love it. It's an opportunity. So go ahead, get a mezuzah, and Muriel, get that mezuzah case. Get a beautiful one because that's the way we do mitzvos. Every one of them.
I would never have believed that I would ever spend the amount of time I've spent looking for the perfect mezuzah case in my whole life. I have one. I don't think I spent 5 minutes thinking about it. It's been there, and I just got this need.
Good.
I find this so amazing out of the blue that I really wanted to get a beautiful mezuzah.
Great.
For my front door.
Perfect.
And in the course of exploring it, I found out that I have a very narrow door lintel. So everyone that I pick out is too big for the door. So I'm looking for a smaller version.
I hear.
But I didn't even know there were sizes other than, you know.
But now you have license to do this because, yeah, you're doing it because you want to beautify the mitzvah. Go for it. Yes. Love it.
Thank you.
Thoughts, comments, questions? Yes, Arlene, but you're on mute.
Sorry. Okay. My mezuzah was my mother's. And I feel that when I touch it, I'm honoring God, but I also remember my mother. So I'm thinking what you're saying. So maybe I'll take it down and I'll polish it, put it back up with a new scroll.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Wonderful, wonderful idea.
Yeah, I don't want to. It's been with me for even before I was born.
I think that's a fabulous idea.
Okay, so we don't need to buy
it. It's a great honor. It's a great honor to your mom, 100%.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. Fred.
What you said at the very beginning made me think.
Good evening.
Well, you talked about that God put more into it when he the splitting of the reeds, right. Reeds, putting so much into it, not just splitting it, but doing so much. And I thought, you know, maybe I need to look at the whole world, at my life, at things in life, with more than just this is nice that we have it, but there's a little more beauty than I might realize. In other words, more emphasis put into the world itself than I've really thought of. I mean, so many things we take for granted.
Excellent.
Yes, recognize certain, but I'm looking at it beyond that. I thought maybe I should. There's some things I never thought about it that way. If I
excellent
look at it,
point, Fred. That's an excellent point. The truth of the matter is that when you know, whenever we talk about the concept of gratitude, the level of gratitude we feel is 100% tied to the level of appreciation we have for what was done. The more we recognize what was done for us, the greater the level of gratitude. So you're right. If we would look at the world and see not just, wow, Hashem, God created a world, but you know what? The most important things in the world, never thought about this. The most important things in the world are free. When's the last time you paid for air? Okay, not cold air. I get that, right? You don't pay for air. You don't pay for water. Okay, we have water because it's pumped, right? But water is free. Air is free. You mean to tell me that God could have made a mint on this? The point being that you're right. The more we recognize the details and just the level of appreciation for what was done, our gratitude goes off the charts. They tell a story, and then Robin, I'll take your question, but they tell the story about a teenager. I don't know how the story came to be, but the story is told that he comes outside, and for his 18th birthday, his uncle got him a car. But the boy had never seen a car before. I don't know. Probably lives in Detroit. They don't have cars there, right? And he comes outside, and he's like, oh, very interesting. What is it? He says, oh, the uncle says, come in, sit down. He puts him in the driver's seat. And he's like, wow, this is cool. I mean, this is like, wow. And he says, oh, wait, I'll show you. We can actually put music on at the same time. And he puts on the radio. Oh, my God, I can play music. I can come out here. But wait, it's warm. I can put the air conditioning. Air conditioning? Oh, my God. He's like, oh, I'll come out here in the summertime, and I'm just going to sit here and relax. And he shows him you can put the seat back. This is amazing, right? And then he finally tells him he can actually go somewhere. It's like, what? It moves? Crazy story, obviously, right? But each little detail about how the car is designed for my pleasure. And nowadays, you push this button and it goes to my wife's settings. And you push that button, it goes to my settings. And you push this button and it automatically starts the video in the back for the kids. And you do that. Like, what can't you do? You know, push that button and you get a Frappuccino. It's like, what else can you do? The level of appreciation goes up and up and up when you take the time to see those little things, those details of what made it even so special. Robin.
Yes, hello. And I missed the first part, so I apologize. But from what I heard from the last part, I guess it's a similar question, almost like Arlene. So if you have something, so for example, Daniel brought back a mezuzah from Israel. So I feel like that's spiritual because it was a spiritual sort of journey.
We're losing you, Robin.
Merging that with the physical part.
I didn't get the question. You went in and out.
Can you hear me?
Barely.
Can you hear me?
Barely. Go ahead.
Oh, just like if you have something that's, you know, like I said, like Daniel brought back the messages. Yeah, part melding with the physical part. Is that possible? Are you still not getting me?
No, it's not coming through.
Sorry, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I can hear you good though, but thank you. Okay. I'll do it another time. It's okay.
Okay, or you can just email me your question.
Yeah, no problem. All right, okay. Thanks.
Any other thoughts? Okay, that being the case, then let's just double check here that we're on.
Okay, Candy, may I just say something very fast to Candy? Sure. Thank you so much. The card